Welcome to the 2021 Concord mayoral debate. My name is Tony Chinella, and I'm the local editor for Concord, New Hampshire Patch, a news and community website here in Concord that's been around for about 10 years. This debate is sponsored by Patch, Concord TV, as well as WKXL Radio 1450 and 103.9 FM. They'll be broadcasting some of the clips, and both Patch and Concord TV will have the debate online for you to access at any time during the event. We have two candidates running for mayor this year. We have incumbent Jim Boulay and challenger Taylor Hall. They will be both given two-minute opening statements and two-minute closing statements. And then in between, I'll be asking them questions and we'll have a conversation about some of those issues. Each candidate will be able to answer all of the questions this evening, although there are a couple that are geared towards just towards them. Thank you again to Concord TV and WKXL for making this commitment to municipal election coverage. Jim, challenger first?
Of course.
Okay. Taylor, you have 2 minutes.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and thank you, Concord TV, Patch, WKXL. So a lot of people have asked why I'm running as somebody that's only lived in Concord for a few short years. And I always tell the story of during the last election cycle, which was shortly after I had moved to Concord. There was an article in, I believe it was the Concord Monitor, discussing the election at that time. And it had said something to the effect of that at that time, neither candidate, Mayor Boulay or the challenger at that time, had done any campaigning or spent the more than $5 necessary to get their names on the ballot. And my now wife and I had both remarked how much apathy that had shown and how upsetting that was to us. One thing that drew us to one another was our interest in local politics and, you know, being part of our community and bettering our community. And again, it was so upsetting to see that level of apathy. And I said then and there, I said, in 2 years, I'm going to run. That's my way of giving back to my community, not showing that level of apathy and starting to build those roots that are going to make us long-term members of our community. So that's the reason why I'm running, and one of the big parts of, you know, why I say it's important that I'm a part of this race. I don't like that level of apathy, not only at the mayoral level, but across the board. I like seeing community involvement. I like seeing people giving back to their community.
Thank you. Jim, 2 minutes.
Tony, I want to thank you and Patch for hosting us today. KXL, and of course our own Concord TV, who does a great job at covering all of our city meetings and school board meetings and such. They're such an integral part of our community. I just want to start by simply saying it has been an absolute honor and privilege to be able to serve as mayor of this great city, and it truly is a great city. I am very proud of the city council and the tremendous successes that we have had as we've managed through this COVID-19 pandemic. And, you know, I was thinking as I was, how do I introduce this? And I was thinking, you know, instead of listening to the things that I think we've accomplished, I thought, you know, for an intro, I think it'd be interesting to see what are other people saying about us. And, you know, when you look at Realtor.com back in their April 2021 Hottest Housing Markets edition, Concord is the second in the hottest real estate market in the country. We have a certificate of achievements and excellence in our financial reporting for over 26 years. As of 2021. We've had the Distinguished Budgeting Presentation Award for the past 6 years as of 2021. And the list goes on. It's small things like even our Arbor Day Foundation recognizes the Tree City USA. It's the Plan New Hampshire Merit Award for our citywide community center that we built, our Main Street revitalization program that we did. Sioux Falls Bridge was recognized by the National Steel and Bridge Merit Award. And the list goes on and on, from, you know, things like Able New Hampshire, an accessibility award at how we've made Main Street much more accessible things. So we have had tremendous success over the past several years, and I've been very fortunate to be part of that. You know, over the past several years, it's been no doubt of what my priorities have been. My number one priority has always been and continues to be responsible budgeting and making sure we as a city live within our means on the municipal side. Economic development is a key component to my priorities, because if we are not growing our tax base, then we're standing still. We need to continue to have a focus on that. And then lastly is the focus on public safety and, of course, our quality of life issues. So I look forward to talking about these issues and many more.
Thank you, Jim. You know, I'm going to rib you a little bit because you didn't start with, it's another great day in the city of Concord, paraphrasing.
Well, I said congratulations, you know, thank you to you, so that's almost like a great day in the city.
Yes, I know. Let's start with Jim and then we'll go with Taylor. Same question for both of you. We'll start with Jim. The city, it would seem, has been unraveling for a number of years now, especially when it comes to substance abuse, homelessness, and mental health issues. In fairness to you and the city council, who are essentially volunteers, you get a stipend, but you know it's not like it's a full-time job. There is not much that you can do, I would think, to act more than being a go-between between city staff, state social service agencies, and things like that. But the public believes that you're not doing enough, that the city council is and the mayor are not acting enough. In fairness, though, to them, which you know, they see you out in the city, they see the counselors, they watch the meetings. Can you do more? And if you can do more, what should it be? Or if not, if you think you're doing enough, why?
Well, first of all, of course we can do more, and I have a plan to do more. But you know, I want to say that the issue of homelessness has been a passion and a core value that's been important to me for a long time. And you know, I was the one who put together the Blue Ribbon Commission on the 21st Century Ending of Homelessness. I brought together all the stakeholders in the city, from education to medical community to nonprofits to our faith community and such, to come up with a plan. And from that, we have set out a path. We have also set up a task force which meets quarterly. But with that, we've also seen organizations within the community really spring up, and we've seen city policies support those organizations. So the Concord Coalition End Homelessness has grown tremendously as a resource in our community. The Friends Program, who support families. Family Promise is a program to support families. You have the Salvation Army, who the city got a community development block grant to add 16 beds to that. We've seen the Winter Shelter. I personally led the effort to start a winter family shelter when there was none, when the churches decided they had exhausted all their means. So, but to your point, there is things we can do. And I just named a lot of different groups in our city which do great work. But one of the things we're missing is a coordination of effort. There is pockets of really good effort, but there is no center individual or organization which can really hold people accountable. And because each one of those individual boards that I talked about, organizations, they're accountable to their own fundraising, their own boards. And I think by creating a center point, then we can do that. The second thing is we need to get down to a granular level. We need to say, okay, what is Tony's issue? Tony needs transportation. If we can get him transportation, that solves his homeless issue. We may be somebody who has a mental health issue. It may be somebody who has a substance abuse issue. It could be a variety of things, a lack of a job, a divorce, who knows? We're all but one paycheck potentially away from homelessness. So by putting together a key person, getting to that granular level, the city can actually, I think, have a huge impact. And this has been proven in other cities.
Thank you. Taylor, you're not on the city council, but take the question and from the same perspective. What more do you think the city council and the mayor can do, if anything, or if not, why?
Yeah. So I typically agree with what the mayor said on a large scale of there needs to be more coordination between the different organizations working to end homelessness. I think all the pieces are there. It's just getting the big picture to work. But I also think, you know, we're also not necessarily doing things at the city level long term that makes sense. I mean, I look in... you know, within the past couple weeks, they broke up the homeless camp over at the planned project. You know, does that really solve the problem? That just displaces the problem. It doesn't solve it. So I look at things like that and I scratch my head and say, you know, that's just moving around something. That's not solving it. But no, I tend to agree with the mayor that, you know, there needs to be more coordination in order to solve the problem.
I know you want to react, but I've got like a ton of questions. If you can give me, I'll give you 15 seconds if you want.
I wholeheartedly appreciate what you're saying about disbanding camps and such. There's nothing worse the time of the year than the fall when people can see the camps. But when a private landowner, a private property owner calls and says, please remove the trespassers, we have an obligation to do that. And I think that's the problem.
Real quick, you can respond real quick before I move to the next question if you want.
That's all right.
Okay. Taylor, this one's for you, and it'll go to Jim after your answer, okay? The City Council has historically attempted to keep tax increases low. I believe it's been under 3%, almost for at least the last 10 years, somewhere in between 0 and 3%, while also funding all the major services that people rely on. The fiscal 2022 budget was around $109 million. What, if any, concerns do you have about the current budget or the next two budgets if you're elected?
Yeah, I understand as a taxpayer, I certainly don't want my tax bill to go up. I look at other ways of increasing the revenue to the city. What can we do to grow that tax base? And those are the ways that we increase the revenue coming into the city. So I look around and I say, okay, we've got, we are the capital of the state here. Can we increase the revenue? I know the state pays us a very, very small amount for having their buildings here. Has that increased in the past 10 years? I don't believe so. Has a state capital ever moved because the city they're in has said, we want a little bit more for providing services here? No.
Don't get the mayor started on the free parking spaces either, because
that was my second point is I understand that there's quite a bit in outstanding parking fees. I believe when I checked it was somewhere around 700,000 in uncollected parking tickets. Maybe more aggressively going after that. So it's starting to go after some of these uncollected things to kind of recover some of those lost monies instead of having to increase.
Thank you. Jim, before you answer the question, can you take 5 seconds and what's $750,000 in unpaid parking tickets or whatever, what percentage is that of the tax base?
Oh gosh.
Okay, all right, never mind. Same question to you.
Well, it's a great question because as you've indicated, the budget, in the whole $109 million, I think it's important to recognize that it's about $69 million. It's actually the operating budget. So that's funding your police, your fire, your general services, et cetera. And we don't raise all $69 million through property taxes. It's only in the around 44, 45 million that's actually collected through property taxes. The rest are fees and fines and other means. Our second largest revenue source in the city, of course, is auto registrations. And that is a real concern going forth in the budgeting is that, as you know, you can go quickly look at some of these auto dealership lots, and there are very, very few new cars. So that is a concern of one of the issues. But I want to talk to you about some of the my efforts around budgeting, because it has been a priority for mine. In FY20, the increase in the tax rate of the municipal side was 1.6. In FY21, it was zero. And in FY22, it was 2.5%. You're actually right. So if you look over the past 3 years, I did try to pick one pre-pandemic and one post, it's about 1.4% average of increase. But that 2.5%, what is that? That was specifically the New Hampshire retirement system downshifting its cost to municipalities. All cities and all municipalities are feeling it, both on the school side and the city side. And that is not a cost that's going to go away. And that downshifting is going to be very important to how we handle that. So when you look at revenues, like potential loss in auto registrations, the continued downshifting from the state, they made adjustments to the rooms and meals tax, and this year we're going to see a bump, and I thank them very much for that. But long term, they shifted the percentage back to local municipalities from 40% down to 30%. That's going to impact our tax rate.
So the property tax cut wasn't really a property tax cut.
I think you could make a strong argument for that.
Okay. You're up against your 2 minutes. All right, so Jim, I'm going to stay with you. Same question again to Taylor after I ask it for Jim. In the last 18 months or so, there has been a lot of discussion about defunding or disbanding the police department. About 93% of the $15 million budget is personnel, meaning any defunding would lead basically to diminished number of officers in the field serving the community. Where do you come down on that issue?
Well, I think you framed it up perfectly, because I think that's the important thing people understand. If you are talking about defunding the police, and I suspect that they're talking about pushing money towards social services, and I understand that, but it is primarily made up of officers. And we have 88 officers on the ground here in Concord. And when you talk about making reductions to the police department, you specifically are talking about removing officers from the street. Since 1989, when our Chief Osgood started with the department, we have the same number of officers today that we had when he started and just came out of the police stands and training. So I think defunding is wrong. I am opposed. I think it is misguided. And I strongly support this, supporting social services. I want to compliment our police department. We have a very strong relationship with Riverbend. And in fact, Concord TV just did a segment on mental health and Riverbend and how they interact with our police department. We have a program where people from Riverbend, personnel, will go out with our officers to calls so that we treat the individual with the appropriate remedy. Not everybody needs to be arrested, and they shouldn't be. If that's, somebody may have a mental health problem. Somebody may have an opiate issue. There are other times that there may be a law enforcement interaction. But defunding is just wrong, it's misguided, and there's no means that we need to take money from police to give to a private nonprofit.
Thank you. Yes or no, should Concord police officers have body cams?
Yes, but there are cost implications to that.
Okay, thank you. Taylor, yes or no on body cams first?
So I say no on body cams.
Thank you. Defund the police?
So I think we're going to be coming around to this a lot. I tend to agree mostly with the mayor. I grew up in a home. My mother worked very closely with law enforcement for her entire career. I don't agree with the sentiment of defunding the police. I don't think that it's a zero-sum game of we need to take money from their budget in order to give to social services. Again, not a zero-sum game. 88 officers is tiny for the size of our community. I look back at, it seems like a distant memory, but prior to the pandemic, I remember, and we're starting to see it again, the officers doing a great job with community policing. And I think when you see more of that, you see that divide between the public and law enforcement fade a little bit. And I think we need to invest in that more than defunding law enforcement across the board.
Thank you, Taylor. You are watching the 2021 Concord mayoral debate between Jim Boulay and Taylor Hall. I'm Tony Chinella. Taylor, you are one of only two candidates to challenge the incumbent who has not been arrested, charged with a crime, or found guilty of a crime. You were, however, in 2018 accused of a hands-free violation, which was later placed on file without a finding, meaning that it was dropped. As you may know, there have been a number of people who have died due to distracted driving with cell phones and other things, and it's more than 100 crashes a year here in New Hampshire, which is why we have the hands-free law. Can you talk about that experience and what you learned from it, and any other comments concerning that?
I'm a little taken aback, and also it's a little refreshing to know that I am the first candidate in a while not to have a criminal record. Good to know. And I do deeply regret not just that I was caught for using my phone while driving, but that I was doing it. It is something that I think, we are all guilty of doing, using our phones, being distracted while driving. It's something that, to your point, a lot of people every year are involved in accidents due to that. And it is something that is very avoidable. As I said, it is something I regret and have been more mindful of moving forward from that incident.
Thank you. And for full transparency to the audience, yes, I have used my phone while driving. Jim, your lobbying firm, Dennehy & Boulay, is considered one of the most profitable firms in the state, according to media reports. In the past, you've been criticized by some of your colleagues in the public for not being as transparent as possible. In one incident, in one instance, in the Kino Garten votes, you left the meeting, but you didn't disclose why. And there was some consternation about that, and it never went anywhere. But here's the question. So, I mean, lobbying is kind of insider baseball. A lot of voters don't know who your clients are. Should you take an extra step in to be as transparent as possible to say, just so everyone's clear, Intralot is one of my clients and I'm not overseeing this meeting, or say Concord Hospital or Casella or any other clients that you have when you step away?
Well, the short answer is yes, but let me expand and simply say, I am very proud of my record and proud of the actions that I've taken as mayor. When I first became mayor, I did something that had not been accomplished by anyone previous to me, and that was establishing a board of ethics. It has been important to me. I do not believe I have any conflicts that I have not disclosed, and I think that ethics in government has been something that has been important to me. I think it's important to the council as a whole. We live in a community that we encourage volunteers to be active. Many counselors that I've served with, and I've served with almost 50 different counselors during my time with the city, many of these individuals have served on other boards, whether it be the Boys and Girls Club, the Preservation Alliance organization, the Greater Concord Chamber of Commerce, Capital Center for the Arts, and the list goes on, the musical, the list goes on. And when those issues come up, I have always required, and our rules require, to make sure that we disclose and you step away. In fact, we actually, because of some questions, we actually clarified our rules so that you not only declare the conflict, because this applies to the zoning board, the planning board, et cetera, and it used to be that somebody would just kind of step away from the table. Now we ask people to actually remove themselves from the room, and I think it's the right thing to do, and that's something that I've done and I'd continue to do. But I would ask all my peers to do the same thing, and that's what's expected. So I think that in a small community where people are involved, you're always going to run into situations. In fact, we actually, during our budgeting process, we give money to specific organizations during our social services that we have counselors actually serve on those organizations. The Crisis Center, for instance, we have a counselor, I believe, who's the chair. She steps away and she doesn't vote on those things. And I think that's, I commend her for being involved in the community, and I think it's important that we all continue to be transparent.
Sure, thank you. Yep.
One of the concerns that I've heard from people,
real quick.
Yeah, it's not necessarily the lobbying, although that is a concern. It's in the disclosure. It's that, you know, are you going to bat hard enough with our state politicians for the city of Concord, with them knowing, okay, you know, I'm going to see Jim tomorrow when he's talking to me about Intralot, so I can just give lip service to city of Concord. That's one of the concerns that I've heard. So it's not necessarily the lobbying per se, it's the, you know, is Concord getting first service, or is it?
So I'm going to let you answer that, and then we're going to, yep, so go ahead.
I appreciate you bringing that up. I'll give you a couple of specific examples. One is, you know, we had to deal with the state of New Hampshire looking to put a secured psychiatric unit taken out of the prison, which is probably the right thing to do in all honesty, and they wanted to move it right on Clinton Street. It was wrong. It was the wrong place to be putting that facility. I think that they should have looked statewide, but it didn't happen. The legislature spoke. They spoke in two different legislatures who actually funded those. But I worked with the legislature. I worked with the governor's office. I worked with administrative services, and I worked with the hospital. And from that, my conversations, we were able to get the hospital to be. In fact, there was recently a Zoom call that where the hospital did for the neighborhoods at my request, and they'll continue to do that. They're going to put it attached to the existing hospital, removed from the street, much, much further away. It is a much smaller facility, and most importantly, I made sure that they're going through the planning board process. And I could give you example after example. When the Exit 17 folks were stalled because they couldn't get a permit from DES and from Fish and Game, I made a call to push it along. After waiting for 8 months and not getting a permit, I pushed for the city of Concord. I defended the city of Concord. I bleed the city of Concord at times. And in 1.5 weeks, we got that permit that allowed for that roundabout to start so that the liquor store, the Market Basket and Wendy's will all start, because we need tax base desperately in Pennacook. And those are just two small examples of how I've advocated for the city.
Thank you, Jim. Taylor, I'm going to come to you to talk about housing, which has been a huge issue in Concord for a myriad of reasons. Low vacancy rate, new people moving into the city and being relocated into the city for the last 20 years, on top of limited new housing construction and permits, as well as a lot of the permits being high-end single-family construction. And at the same time, there's only a limited amount of buildable areas of the city, and a lot of land is being put into conservation easements. What should the city council do, or what will you do as mayor, to deal with some of the housing issues?
Well, there's no easy answers with housing. It's a very complicated issue, and as mayor, there's a limit to what can be done. I think a lot of the housing issues, you know, they unfortunately trickle in both directions, but trickle, you know, particularly upwards at the state and federal level. I mean, I just bought a house last week, so I like to think I'm a little more aware of some of the issues that are going on right now in Concord with housing than, you know, perhaps some people that have been here a while. You know, I look and I see, you know, particularly with mixed-use housing, we don't have a particular amount of that, to your point, you know, zoning, things like that. It can be a little difficult. I know, you know, an issue was brought up to me where, you know, there aren't a lot of difficult to get exemptions made for zoning was an issue that was brought up to me, and I wish I had some more specifics in front of me. Unfortunately, I'm blanking, but.
I'm going to give you 15 more seconds. Can you tell us how difficult it was to get to the point where you rented an apartment to buying a home?
It was very, very difficult process. And one of the things, you know, this is going to take a little more than 15 seconds. I bought a multifamily house. I'm strongly incentivized to use the rental side of that as an Airbnb, which is taking a property away from a renter, a long-term renter. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to end up doing that, but there is a strong incentive, and there should be something in place that doesn't incentivize me to do that.
There aren't many Airbnbs in Concord. Jim, housing.
Well, I think, first of all, let me say, housing is the number one issue in the city of Concord and the state of New Hampshire. Housing has a huge impediment. If we don't have places for people to live, we can't bring jobs in, we can't bring in folks who are going to be part of our network and our fabric of our community. But, you know, when you look at the housing issue, you know that the cost of land is very, very expensive. You bought a house, you know that. My daughter, she recently bought a house. She put offers on 27 different houses before she was able to be successful. It is a very difficult task. We know that if you try to get a plumber or electrician these days, it is next to impossible. Labor is difficult. We know that getting materials can be incredibly difficult. If you order cabinets, you're lucky to get them in 6 months. And we know that interest rates are low, and they're probably going to step up, and we'll see what happens. So where does the city council come in on this? And I think that's really the crux of the problem, or the crux of the issue. We have the ability to affect this problem in Concord, and through all our local officials can. Specifically, we are responsible for zoning in our community. And one of the things that we can do, and we are looking at right now, is looking at density. If we can create higher densities where our city services are, where our water, where our sewer, where our good transportation systems are, if we can increase that density, we not only increase the value of people's homes and such, but we also get people places to live. So density is a huge thing that's going to be talked about, whether I'm here or you're here or whoever you're here. That is going to be an issue that we're going to talk about. And last, the second two things are fees. It is unbelievable the number of fees that a developer or a homeowner experiences when they try to do a new project. There's the inspection fees, there's the hookup fees, there's the planning board fees, and I'm proud to say that I had a legislator say, well, you local people never get rid of fees. We do get rid of fees. I got rid of the impact fees on commercial properties. I got rid of, you know, on solar. So we have done that, but I've asked the assistant city manager, Carlos Bahia, to review all of the fees. He reported back at my request to the Fiscal Policy Committee on Monday, and the Fiscal Policy Committee is going to be reviewing all those fees, and I think there is plenty of room to either eliminate or reduce greatly. That is a huge barrier to creating housing in this community. And the last thing I'll say, This one's hard to get your arms around, but it is the attitude of people in the community. We have tried to add, and I could go through all the additional units that have been either proposed or successful in the city, but when you go to those local meetings, it's inevitable somebody comes out and says, I don't want that in my backyard. We've got to change that attitude, because if we don't have housing, we're not going to have the people to work in our jobs. And you know, how often do you see our local stores are closed certain days because they can't get the help?
Jim, I'm going to stay with you and then go to Taylor on this one. I'm going to continue with housing. The City Council and you as well recently approved the sale of the Employment Security Building to Massachusetts developer John Flatley. There, you know, while the math seems good because there's revenue planned in advance, one of the pitches is that the Sears Block TIF district will be paid off. According to city records, there were at least three other deals that seemed to bring in more revenue immediately. And in fact, it looks as if when you're looking at the financials, that the city's kind of taken a bath on the project. While you focused on market rate housing and market rate housing downtown, and you have been, and the city council has been very frugal on trying to increase taxes, wouldn't it have been better in the long run to have gone with one of the three deals that was anywhere from $1.1 to $1.6 million?
Actually, you know, let me add a little fuel to that fire. Since 2013, there actually been 17 redevelopment proposals that were considered from 8 different developers. It's far more than three. We went down the road with one.
If I can correct myself, so three of the last six in the RFP, just to be clear.
Since we rejected the last one, and we've spent 2 years trying to work out that deal. And I am one of the powers of being mayor, being on city council, that I've learned more than anything, it's still like being a parent, is the ability to say no. If you can say no, it is amazing. And I was proud to say no to a $3 million giveaway that I thought was completely inappropriate. And the deal that we have now with Flatley is much more beneficial to the city of Concord, providing 64 units of housing, 80,000 square feet of the building. And we know that the turnaround for paying the TIF off is we're going to see the return in about 6 years. That is actually very quick. And it doesn't mean they're not going to pay their full tax. They are, and I think that's a great thing to pay off that TIF, because we know that, you know, take the Neoctiv TIF, we can talk about TIFs for a long time, you know, we're giving back $1 million a year in that. But without the TIF, a lot of these projects would not occur. They just simply would not happen. And in terms of adding affordable or market rate versus workforce, whatever the term is these days, you know, we did work the Caleb project in Penacook. We've worked with Catch, added their 42 units right now up in on Village Street, and the list goes on. So the city, the city's been involved in most all of these successful projects that have happened. Two, we are looking for all types of housing, because a lot of people are moving. You know, your older folks may be downsizing, younger families looking to upsize. So we need all kinds, but we do need workforce. We need affordable homes that our folks can do and move into. But the Employment Security Building, there's no one happier than me to want to move on from that, trust me. But I think this was a good deal. Our city investment's about $1.6 million right now, and we'll see that quickly returned.
Taylor, do you have any comment about the Employment Security Project or market rate housing downtown?
Just the hottest real estate market in the country right now, and it seems like a lot of people are upset about this deal. So that's all that I have about that.
Thank you, Taylor. I'm going to stick with housing for one more quick question. During the Black Lives Matter rally and marches, there were a number of concerns raised by activists concerning segregation of housing in the city. And it shouldn't be, and I should caveat this by saying, not segregation by landlords, saying that certain people can't move, but almost a separation of neighborhoods where culturally there are large sectors of people who are congregated into certain neighborhoods and not the affluent neighborhoods of town. One of the activists used a word that I won't use, which I find offensive. But what can be done to change the sentiment that some residents have that housing is segregated in the city?
Yeah, so I think, and again, anything housing related, I think it's very difficult, and anything getting into the very diverse communities that we have, there's, again, no easy answers. But you know, I think focusing on mixed income and mixed use housing, you're going to see a lot of those barriers start to fall, where you start mixing different diverse groups of people and getting that interaction that we don't currently have. To your point, you know, a lot of these communities are very segmented. There's not a lot of mixing right now, and it creates those barriers. I think we start seeing, you know, that mixed income, mixed use housing, you'll start seeing a lot of these tensions start to evaporate more.
Jim?
You know, there's actually a lot within that question that you asked. I mean, there's the housing piece, and you could talk about how, you know, but just a decade ago, the complaint was there was no high-end housing in the city. They were all going to Canterbury, and they were going to Hopkinton, they were going to Bow. Right? You know, and now we're talking about affordable housing. So, you know, and we have a split in Concord of about 50-50 between single-family residents and multifamily dwellings and such. But I think the key component to your question is, and it's something that I'm very, very proud of, is that, you know, we are a welcoming community here in Concord. We have, I think our community, our city is much better for being diverse and welcoming our new Americans. I can tell you, for instance, that you know, the federal government is actually the ones who decide where and how many we get in the state of New Hampshire. And as you can imagine, most of our new Americans come up the 93 corridor, so it's Nashua, Manchester, Concord, and Laconia. And soon we will be receiving some folks who were in Afghanistan who will be coming to the city of Concord. There's actually probably about 100 that are coming to New Hampshire from the last number that I got. We don't control where they go or place in our city. Most times it's based upon the vacancy rates within the cities and where they go. And then once people get here, the city can't say, you have to stay here. You know, we've had situations where folks have come in, they move to our community, and then they've moved to Manchester because that's where their family is and they want to be close to their family. So, but what we can do as a city is make sure that we are providing the services, the resources that people need so that they can be successful. And that's one of the reasons why I was so proud, the fact that after the city came back with a proposal for a community center that was astronomical in price, and I led the charge in the council to say no to that, the administration came back with a sharper pencil, came back with a community center after I convinced the school board to sell it to us for a dollar up on the Heights. And we now have, I think, a state-of-the-art multi-generational community center where we have libraries, we have senior activities that are all served there. And I think that we should be very, very proud of our diversity. We should welcome folks and make sure that we are providing the necessary resources for them to be successful.
And I just want to be clear that this was a sentiment that was stated from an activist, not necessarily a city official, myself, or anyone else, about the segregation issue. This is the 2021 Concord mayoral debate between Jim Boulay and Taylor Hall. I'm Tony Schinella. Concord's a unique place in that we have very unique political structures and two school districts. And it's not actually like any other city in the state or country. And that frustrates a lot of people. I'd like to run through a couple of or a few quick potential reform ideas and get your perceptions of them. Jim, we'll start with you first. As you know, the city has a strong city manager system and a weak mayor. Although I will note that when you were on vacation,
a weak mayor?
When you were on vacation, everyone was joking about who do we call to find out what's going on. Should this be changed to, say, a weak or strong administrator with a strong mayor and council?
Well, you know, with all due respect to my friends to the south of us, you know, I don't think we want to become Manchester and we don't want to become Nashua. We have an excellent form of government here where the manager is an expert in managing truly government, public administration, and a council who I believe is very close to the citizens here in Concord. You know, any one of us are extremely accessible. You have 10 ward councilors, 5 people run it citywide. There's no question, and my number is out everywhere, and people feel free to use it. So I think the current form of government we have works. We get the benefit of both worlds. We get the expertise that comes with planning, finance, and such, and you really get that on the ground feel from politicians. And I'll add one last thing. One of the key key reasons why I would not want to change is when you look just southwest of Manchester, Nashua, look at how partisan these elections have become. That's not Concord. We are not partisan. The only people that I feel beholden to are the citizens of Concord. I am not beholden to one party or the other. I am beholden to the citizens of Concord.
Taylor, any thoughts?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Sure. Should we switch from a strong city manager system to a weak administrator or manager system and a strong mayor?
So great question. And so I guess, I'm a little confused because during the Monitor article where I was interviewed, Jim rebutted and, explained that we are a weak mayoral system, as, I was aware. But, today has been, kind of taking a lot of credit. So I guess I'm a little confused as to how exactly the system works. But no, we are a strong city manager system, and I think that works. You have a very strong administrator and a mayor who should be a public voice, a leader, who's out there advocating strongly for the city, and I think that works. I do like that this is a nonpartisan election, and I'll circle back to that point later, because I do think that that's very important. This works for the city.
Taylor, we're going to stay with you and then go to Jim with this one. Being a city councilor is considered by some to be a thankless job. They get a small stipend. Should they be paid, and if yes, how much?
Politics has always been envisioned as a volunteer, as a obligation, not as a paid profession. That's how our framers always envisioned it, and I think as I said, it's community service. So I don't think that it should be something that's very well paid. It's something that you should do as a way to give back to your community. That's part of why I love the state. I think a lot of people know I didn't grow up here, but what I love about the state is we do have such a strong local community. Our lawmakers aren't paid well. They do it out of the love of being a politician, of working with their community.
Thank you. Jim?
Well, for full disclosure, the mayor does get $2,000 a year, and the city councilors do get $1,000 a year, so you could say we're actually paid. But the answer is, the short answer to your question is no. We don't need a professional city council, highly paid. I think you have a wonderful group of people who are around that table, whether it be on the planning board, zoning board, school board, city council. The fact that these volunteers are willing to give of their time and their expertise, we are very, very fortunate in this city, and we benefit greatly from those volunteers. So no, we don't need to pay. We have great people now.
Jim, staying with you, should the city council have oversight of the Concord School District budget?
The answer is no. I'm running for the city council. I'm not running for the school board. And I'm not going to pretend that I have any expertise in school board issues. I have probably my own personal opinions, having three children who've gone through the systems. But, in terms of oversight, I don't think it's appropriate. I will add this, though, that myself as mayor, we have had great relationships with the school board over the years. We have a committee. It's a joint city school committee. But informally, the president of the school board and myself, I've always had a great relationship, a very strong working relationship. And in fact, I could go back when Cass Ardinger was president of the school board and the city council was in trouble because we had a downshifting that we needed to work with, and they were able to forego some projects to allow us to do some things. That's the type of communication, that's the type of ability I think I can do to bring things together. And you don't need the formal oversight, it actually happens anyway.
Agree. No reason that the two need to be intertwined. I think it's important to have them separate, but I do think that we need to do better as a city to promote the great schools that we have here. Again, as the mayor, we need to, as a city, we need to promote that we have great schools here, great public schools. We have the New Hampshire School of Law here. We have some fantastic private schools. So I think we need to do better promoting that we have a great education system in this town.
Thank you. I'm going to stay with you, Taylor, and then go to Jim. The owner of Educating for Good, her name is Carissa Caro, and I have to thank her because she recently made a compelling case in a column of bringing the Merrimack Valley School District into the fold. And it's almost as if, you know, you have about a 10% or 15% of the population that's with that school district. Her proposal, she was really focused on the Pennacook property taxes, which are quite higher than they are in Concord, and the recent Exit 17 TIF decision. But I'd like to get a comment from you on the other side of it, because, you know, Pennacook property taxes being lowered would be a good thing for Pennacook residents. But it also, we have this like monster, you know, if you will, coming forward in a Runlet Middle School project, which is was priced at $68 to $80 million before inflation and construction costs went up by 300% in lumber and other things. A merging of the two school districts would require the city to be involved in some ways because of many different facets, even though they're two separate school districts. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Admittedly, I don't know enough about this to have any thoughts right now, so I'm not going to weigh in and offer an opinion.
Okay. Jim?
You know, I hesitate to weigh in on school issues, but I will say, you know, we are a very unique community in having two distinct school districts within our 64 square miles, Merrimack Valley and Concord High School. And it poses challenges for, in fact, you were at a meeting that I was chairing last night on redistricting, something we go through every 10 years to redraw the ward lines. And here we are trying to draw lines such that Merrimack Valley can be as represented in that ward as we can. We know there are about over 6,000 students who live in Concord who go to Merrimack Valley High School or to within the Merrimack Valley School District system. You know, it's a challenge. I've never understood why we have so many school district supervisor unions, but I will say that the relationship between the municipal side, Concord School District, Merrimack Valley District, is actually very close. You know, we've worked together on many projects, but it's a challenge.
And lastly, Jim, and we'll go to Taylor after this, the Concord School District's also going through a charter review. Do you think it's time for the city to sit down and have a charter review?
You know, great question. That is not something that's been proposed or discussed recently. I think the folks who did write the charter is a very solid document. It's something that I keep with me at every meeting. You know, could there be some small tweaks in it? Perhaps. But I think the general principles are stand today as strong as they were when they were written.
Thank you.
Review doesn't mean that it needs to be changed, but I think it should be. It's worth reviewing, seeing if any changes are worth being proposed and made. You know, it's only up for review every so often. Why not go through that process?
Thank you. We have a few more minutes. I'm going to get one more quick one in. Taylor, do you play golf?
Not well, and it's been a number of years.
Currently, the Beaver Meadow Golf Course is in the process of considering a new clubhouse and some maintenance upgrades to the tune of about $6.3 million. They're not necessarily budgeted for tomorrow, but they're budgeted ahead, you know, they're going to go through the process of considering it. There's only going to be about $600,000 contributed from the course itself, meaning that many of us who do not play golf, tens of thousands of us actually, will be footing the cost for a new building. Is this the best use of taxpayers' money?
Well, there's a lot of us that don't necessarily use the city parks. There's a lot of us that don't necessarily use some of the city services, yet we all do indirectly foot the bill for those. Beaver Meadow it's a city-owned golf course. This is something that needs to be done as an improvement, and like it or not, you know, it is something, unfortunately, that we do all have to bear the burden of. It, you know, will trickle down to increased revenue for them. So I do think that it is something that should be done.
Jim, I know you play golf because I've seen you with your clubs.
I do. Doesn't mean I play well, but I try. As I say, I get my money's worth. How's that? You know, you ask a really great question because it comes to the fundamental issue of our capital improvement program. And when you look at that capital improvement program is where we place those dollars. And it's really a question of priorities every year of what is important, how do we do it? Do we invest? And what you're really talking about is quality of life issues here in the city. And when you think about all the services that are provided in the city, there are only two departments that really we do not have to fund. One of them is Parks and Rec, and the second is our library. But our Parks and Recs, it speaks so much to the heart of our quality of life. We have 90 miles of trails and conservation land in the city, which is very important. And when I meet with CEOs and business owners here in the community, and they're trying to recruit employees, younger employees from Massachusetts and elsewhere, those employees need some place to go to recreate, to do the things they do after their work. But Beaver Meadow specifically, as you might remember, was purchased many years ago with land water conservation funds. And as a result, if you were to change the use of the golf course, for instance, you would have to replace that use someplace else. So Boys and Girls Club, for instance, when we used some of the park that was purchased water conservation, we had to actually replace it at Garrison Park with other land. I don't look at it as a golf course. I look at it as a city asset. Just like, you know, you could ask the question about the Westry Ward House. The Westry Ward House has a considerable amount of necessary repairs that need to be done, a slate roof that needs repairs. Is that something that should be spent? But we know that Beaver Meadow Clubhouse is not only a golf course, it is one of the key cross-country skiing areas in our city. There's groups now who are trying to actively raise money for a snow grooming equipment, or skating. We have the simulator golf during the winter. It's our voting location, which is critical to that ward. And as you know, it's not easy to find those things. So this city asset is really important to us, and I think we need to make the investment, specifically when you have sewer pipes that are backing up into the bathrooms, when you have windows that are falling out of the building. It's been neglected. It's time we need to do something.
30 seconds real quick, and then we're going to go to closing statements. Why can't we make it a 9-hole golf course, sell part of the land? It's 169 acres. Sell part of the land to a developer. The whole golf course is surrounded by homes. There could easily be more homes built, which would solve the housing problem, while also using money to offset the costs of almost $6.5 million. Real quick.
You could do that. You'd have to find a subsequent area someplace else in the city to recreate because of the purchase of water, land water conservation, number one.
And we've spent a lot of money on conservation easements.
And number two, I think it's a question of priorities and quality of life in the city. And I think that the golf course is as important as the arena for skating, as important as some of the other things we have.
Any other thoughts on making a smaller clubhouse, selling off the land, or anything else?
I think that's a great idea. I'd definitely be open to something like that, but I'd also like to hear arguments on the other side of the coin. I think Jim makes a great point. You know, we would have to look into what decreasing it to a 9-hole course would look like.
Thank you both. So now it's your turn. You both get 2-minute closing statements. Jim, we'll start with you.
Find my notes. I figured you'd start with me. Well, first of all, let me say again, thank you very much. The time flies when we're here with you and the questions. And Taylor, thank you for being here to participate. I started by saying, and I'll close by saying, it has truly been an honor to be able to serve this great city as mayor. And I am very proud of the accomplishments that we have made during my term as mayor. The one that we haven't talked about that I am probably most proud about is PITCO. And just recently announced that PITCO is coming to our city. I worked with them. My first phone call was to them with January 23rd of this year, and it took 9 months to get them to come, but they are bringing over 400 jobs. They are adding almost a 500,000 square feet of space. They're adding over 40 million dollars in tax base expansion. That is the largest tax base expansion since I think the mall. So, as mayor, one of the things you have is a bully pulpit, and that's one of the things that I use to. So we need to continue to that being one of the latest to bring jobs and to add tax base to our city, and I'm proud of that. We have Concord is on the move. We have tremendous positive momentum, and quite frankly, now's the time to continue building on that momentum and those successes. So what's at stake about this election? I think this election comes down to leadership, experience, and quite frankly, it comes down to a steady hand and moving us away from one of the most difficult times that we've had in recent history. That we need to continue to add to our tax base, support our public safety, and to continue the high quality of life for all of our citizens in Concord. So I believe I have a proven track record. You know me, and I like to believe and I feel that part of our success is the fact that I've been able to bring people together. I fight for our city every day, whether it be at the State House or around the state. And so I'm asking you for your vote on November 2nd to continue the momentum of success.
Thank you. Taylor?
So I said that I was going to circle back to the part about the nonpartisan election. So I'll do that now. Last night I had a conversation with a student at Ithaca College. She grew up in this area and reached out. She's working on journalism student and working on a project and reached out to a local politician or somebody running for political office to do an interview. And we were having that interview, and towards the end she said, and she'd done her homework, I was very impressed. She said, researching you and Jim, you seem to be center right, he seems to be center left, you tend to agree seemingly on a lot of issues. And basically right, she was basically correct, but I do like that this is a nonpartisan election, though I think where we disagree on some key things is how to implement things in the city. I opened by saying, I think what the city needs is somebody young with energy that it doesn't have that apathy. I know Jim mentioned that he has the experience. I trust that the city bureaucracy has everything under control. I trust the city council. I want to be that leader that can steer the ship, that can be that voice, reaching out to people, getting things done. And I believe that I am ready, and I'm looking forward to your vote on November 2nd.
That is the two people, or those are the two people, who are running for mayor here in the city of Concord. If you don't know where you vote, there's all kinds of resources on the city website, as well as the voter's guide on the Concord, New Hampshire Patch News website. You'll see this interview as well as other interviews and debates. We're doing 5 this year, and also all the voting locations, maps, and things like that. Election day is Tuesday, November 2nd. There are 10 wards in the city and 10 polling locations, and they are open from 7 a.m. until 7 p.m. Again, I want to thank Concord TV for helping us produce these debates, WKXL 1450 and 103.9 FM. I'm Tony Shinola. Thank you so much for tuning in.